Coming up on this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, Carl and Jason are so excited about the brand new animated series Star Wars Rebels that they have to sit down and talk about it. Spoilers are everywhere as they discuss the characters and favorite plot points from the premiere. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Rebels. Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClair and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 103. Who is that kid? I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the Kanan Jarrus to my chopper. We have Carl LeClair.
I like being Kanan because it sounds like the land of Canaan that God promised to the people of Israel. Chopper is awesome, Jason. I love him already.
I know. He's fantastic.
He really is. He's so cute and funny, and not in like a annoying way. It's amazing. So his little arms going.
Yes, I'm going to have to bring that up when we get into our topic later.
But I know it. So we are here.
What are we talking about?
We're going to talk about Rebels. It's a secret on the street. This girl, she loves Rebels, yeah. But yeah, we're going to be talking about the new series called Rebels tonight. It's going to be good.
Yes.
So yes, for those of you who don't know, Star Wars Rebels, the new Disney XD television program began I guess you could get it to watch the week before if you were a XD subscriber or something like that. I don't remember exactly how it worked.
You had access to the Watch Disney XD app.
That's right.
All you need is a cable provider that has Disney XD on it. You download the app either on your computer or your smartphone or tablet. And then you put in your cable information, and voila, you have access to episodes of Star Wars Rebels.
Very cool. Early. Well, I did not see it early. I watched it the night of its premiere with some friends.
As did I.
It was wonderful. I went down to New York City to hang out with Joe Hogan and company. So we had a great time watching Rebels. Nothing better than watching it with friends. So,
very true.
It was great. Did you watch it with Kyle Baca?
I watched it the night it came out with my mom, and then on the following night, I went over to Kyle Baca's house, and we watched it again. So
yes, I have now watched it 5 times. It's good.
I've seen it 3 times. Ooh. Now. So I'm 2 behind you.
That's
okay.
You're
gonna have to catch up.
You will, because I'm going to watch it again tonight, Jason, just to give you even more to catch up to.
Oh man! Well, blasted. I read A New Dawn. I read A New Dawn, and you haven't done that yet. So ha!
I know you win. All right, I get it. I haven't read A New Dawn.
Yes.
Before we get into all this Rebel stuff, we did have a matchup from our last episode, which was Darth Vader, episode 4, Darth Vader versus General Grievous. And Jason, why don't you just go ahead and talk about how the responses went?
Oh, man, I picked this matchup because I thought we were going to get a really interesting response, because I thought it was going to be close. And I could not have been more wrong. We have a... From the Larians, we have a complete and total landslide shutout here. For Darth Vader. Everybody who voted, who responded to the matchup said Darth Vader. And I'm not, since we got so many of them, it's 28 Larians responded saying Darth Vader to 0 for General Grievous.
Did you say 28?
We got 28 responses.
That's ridiculous.
28 to nothing. As far as the Larians are concerned, Darth Vader over General Grievous. And since it was that lopsided, I'm not going to read a bunch of the responses, but here's some of what people were saying when they, you know, were voting for Vader here. Vader is, you know, going to beat him blindfolded. There was a lot of talking about him force choking General Grievous, not even close, no contest. There's just a lot of that sort of stuff going on. And most people were just saying, this is, you know, why are you... We had someone ask, you know, why is this a matchup? Because it's not even close. But, you know, everybody in the end said Vader would win. There was a couple of people mentioning the fact that Vader would shatter Grievous into a bunch of metal toothpicks. But I was just completely shocked with how lopsided and definitively Darth Vader won. So what do you have to say about this, Carl?
I mean, I love that you came up with this. I think it's a fun matchup. And I'm not surprised Vader, like, won in a landslide. I'm a little surprised Grievous didn't get at least, like, 4 or 5 votes. Because, again, you know, this is episode 4 Vader. We're not talking Darth Vader right at the end of Rots before he's, you know, defeated by Obi-Wan. We're talking an old cyborg human man who's shattered, who has not gone up against a real formidable foe for a very long time, most likely. Although, you know, I mean, if you could think of In the Shadows of the Empire novel, which of course now is just a legend, it's not EU, but, it, you know, he is practicing against these droids that are programmed with all these different lightsaber techniques. So there's a good chance that he did continue to fight against droid-type things. So, again, that would be, like, analogous to Grievous. I still think Darth Vader would win. Having those Force abilities certainly give him the advantage, like everybody mentioned. But when it comes to, like, lightsaber technique, though, you know, if Grievous gets in close, Vader could be in trouble, because Grievous is very quick, and he's smart mm-hmm. with his lightsabers. You know, I mean, I think Darth Vader definitely wins, but I don't think it's, like, a crushing defeat right from the get-go. I think Grievous puts up a little bit of a fight. Because, to me, the way I think of it is, like, Grievous did okay against Obi-Wan, who's one of the best Jedi in the galaxy in Revenge of the Sith, and to me, Darth Vader from episode 4 is nothing compared to that skill level. That's my opinion. So, you know, I think, again, I definitely side with the Larians. I think Vader definitely wins this, but I think it's closer than a lot of people implied. But what do you think?
Oh, man. I thought it was going to be a hard-fought fight. Now, I'm not going to disagree with everybody. I do think in the end, Vader would pull it out. But, oh, man. Carl's just distracting me with his Admiral Akbar action figure wearing Embo's hat.
It's a hat! Sorry.
Oh my goodness.
This is what happens when you let boys play with toys.
Oh, no kidding.
Okay. Anyway, sorry.
Where was I?
You were talking about why you think it'd be closer.
Yes, I did think it'd be closer because, yeah, like you said, Grievous is a lot faster than Vader is in the OT, even when he's, you know, moving at his quickest later on in Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. Although Vader's overwhelming power, I think, will eventually, you know, hold out and Grievous will eventually end up being defeated. I don't think it's going to be a landslide at all. I think it'd be really close. And a lot of people were mentioning force choking. And I don't see that as much of a possibility because I have no idea if Grievous still has a trachea to choke. So, yeah, he's got a heart, maybe some lungs, not entirely sure, and maybe a couple of other organs, but trachea, he doesn't eat anymore. So I have no idea. I'm not even sure he has lungs anymore, because how would a droid breathe? Osmosis? I don't know. But but yeah, I don't think force choking would work on Grievous. So now, crushing his chest cavity? Yeah, that would work. But just a standard old force choke? I don't think so. But that being said, I'm going to have to side with everybody else. I think overall, Vader is just a little bit better and probably just a little bit smarter than Grievous. Therefore, giving us a unanimous 30-0 landslide shutout of Darth Vader over General Grievous. So, there you have it. I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. Whenever you put, if you ever put Darth Vader up against somebody, no matter how formidable the opponent might be, I think because Darth Vader is such a beloved character in Star Wars lore that, and Grievous, I think, is a very polarized figure because there's a lot of fans that don't like him.
Right.
You know, and I do remember somebody, and I apologize for not remembering who specifically, but somebody made a great point of saying, you know, like if we're talking like Episode 4 Vader versus, you know, the, oh, darn it, I always forget his name. Genndy Tartakovsky, is that right?
Yes, the Genndy Tartakovsky.
Yeah, you know, that Grievous might actually stand a chance. Right,
because that was Christopher Sangnetta.
Okay. And I think that's a good point. You know, I mean, the Grievous that we first met in the Tartakovsky series.
Tartakovsky.
Yeah, I always butcher his name and Joe Hogan gets really mad at me. But, you know, that Grievous is far more formidable and very scary. That's a Grievous to reckon with. But the Grievous we get in Revenge of the Sith and, you know, the Clone Wars series is kind of a pushover, sadly to me. You know, I think if they kind of kept him that scary presence that he was in when we first met him in the Cartoon Network series, I think people would have had a far stronger reaction to him rather than being this bumbling guy with asthma.
I don't know. I think by the end of Clone Wars, like late season 4 through season 5, I think Grievous was formidable and dangerous. Particularly what he did to, you know, Asajj Ventress and the Night Sisters on Dathomir.
That's true.
And then the way he pretty well manhandled Ahsoka in the Younglings arc. You know, she was able to escape, though.
Yeah. Well, he should be able to manhandle Ahsoka.
I think towards the end of it, he was a little more of a threat. But yeah, earlier on, not so much.
Right. Yeah. So, anyway, that's the matchup results.
And that being said, we're going to give you a poll at the end of this episode so that hopefully we won't have a complete shutout of everything.
And yes.
Favor of one thing.
Right. So. Yeah, before we get to that at the end of the episode, I think it's worth mentioning, I don't know, Jason, have you heard about this new television show? I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe it's called Star Wars Rebels. Have you heard of it?
Vaguely. I think that was, I think I saw somebody on Facebook that mentioned it was coming. It wasn't a big deal or anything.
No, not really. I think it follows the adventures of Jar Jar and Asajj Ventress. I'm pretty sure is what it's about. I could be wrong. No. Okay. I feel like I'm wrong.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. Mental picture in that of Asajj Ventress trying to not strangle Jar Jar from the first episode. Really funny in my head.
Excellent.
Anyway. Let's be real here, folks.
Yes, let's
Star
Rebels.
Wars Rebels. Oh my gosh!
What's your initial initial response, Jason? What was it?
This is awesome. But I have reasons. But we'll get into that in a minute. Well, your initial response.
Same thing. Okay. I was really, really, really happy with it. I mean, I thought it was great. So. Yeah, I think might as well get into the whys.
Yes.
Because there was a lot there in that, you know, it's basically a two-part episode in one. And I think they did a really good job. I mean, I know you liked the Clone Wars movie. I did not. I think they learned from the... I think a lot of people were not a fan of the Clone Wars movie enough that I think they did a really good job with the way they approached the start of Rebels. Also, we're getting a totally a different storyline, though, too, right? I mean, we're not getting... These are all brand new characters. You can kind of do whatever you want.
Right.
So there was a certain freedom there that they didn't necessarily have with the Clone Wars.
Right. And by the way, folks, right now, this is spoiler warnings galore. We're going to be talking specifics about this episode.
Oh,
if you have not seen the two-part premiere...
Spark of Rebellion.
Spark of Rebellion, Rebels dealio thing... either be prepared to be completely spoiled by this episode or come back after you've seen it. We will not be talking about the new episode, Droids in Distress. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's available for some people out there to watch. We will not be talking about that at this point. Who knows if we'll, you know, we probably won't dedicate an entire episode to it. We'll probably bring it up later at some point. But anyway.
Right, yeah, we're not a Rebels podcast. No. There's going to be plenty of those out there.
Yes.
We definitely want to give our response to at least this initial airing.
Yeah. Now, if you are looking for a Rebels podcast, I've got two to recommend to you. Star Wars Report's Rebels Roundtable. You can find on StarWarsReport.com. And, of course, our good buddy Michael Cohen and Matt Cranky are doing the Rebels podcast. Be sure to check out both of those if you want a Rebels podcast.
Right. So.
But anywho, back to the show.
Yes.
Back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Brought to you by Ewoks with Hats.
It's a hat! It's a hat!
My initial response to the show, why I liked it so much right from the get-go, was that it felt like the OT. It had such an OT Star Wars feel to it that that's what I immediately took to. And if you really think about it, the OT era has not been touched on in 20 years in Star Wars. I mean, we've had nothing but Clone Wars. You know, since Revenge of the Sith came out in 2005, we've had nothing but Clone Wars. So it's been almost a decade. Even before that, I mean, obviously it was all the prequel movies, but we have not had anything with an OT feel to it since 1997 when the special editions came out. So I just think, you know, this is pretty, it's a really exciting feel for those of us who are, you know, real big fans of the OT era. I think that was why my initial response was that I liked it so much. But it was cool because it still felt like, the animation, you know, which is very, you know, very similar to the Clone Wars, was, again, like, just really, really well done. And it looked really, really good. So it had, like, it had that fun feel of the Clone Wars, but with kind of that old nostalgic feeling, in a sense, of the OT.
Yeah, the thing is it had the fun adventure and the action and the excitement of Clone Wars with the humor of the OT. In it, which I thought was great. Oh, goodness. My mind just totally stopped what I was about to say.
That's the worst.
It is. But yeah, it's a nice mix. Yes, it's definitely leaning much more towards the original trilogy than anything else because it's drawing so much from Ralph McQuarrie.
Mm-hmm.
But just touching real quick on the animation, the animation is a little more simplified and stylized differently than the Clone Wars is, which is nice because it sets it apart as its own thing, its own entity, and I like it. But I thought it all worked really well. There was nothing looked clunky. You know, all the tricks and techniques that they've picked up over the years working on Clone Wars, they are definitely putting right into Rebels with this new style of animation. I really liked it too. It's a very colorful series.
Yeah. Yeah, especially our characters, you know, like the main character group, they all have such vibrant costumes. Such, you know, yeah.
It's a lot of orange and purple and green going on.
Yeah, which are not your normal everyday colors.
Right.
And again, I love how greatly it's contrasted with the colors of the Empire. We've got the blacks and the grays, the white stormtroopers. I mean, it has that very clear good guy versus bad guy feel.
Yeah. So what do you think of some of the characters? Let's start with some of the characters, I think. Would that be a good place to start?
Yeah.
Ezra, he's the first one we see.
Right.
What is your impression of him after seeing this?
Okay, so my very first response was I didn't really care for Ezra, mm-hmm. only because he just felt like another Ahsoka-styled character. He's kind of the annoying brat who is young and obnoxious, and I don't have any point of connection with. But as I've watched it, like I said, four more times, he has definitely grown on me because it's very clear he is the Luke Skywalker, Anakin Skywalker character of our story. He is the one, and I'll mention this a little bit later, but the, you know, all of his little force interactions, which were awesome. I really enjoyed that. So, you know, he's definitely not my favorite character at this point, but I definitely already like him more than I was expecting to. Again, the very first watching, I was like, eh, I can do, you know, I'm not crazy about him. But again, it was a first episode, and he's going to get flushed out. I'm very confident of that, because I didn't like Ahsoka for like two full seasons.
Right.
And then she definitely grew on me, and Ezra already has the potential to grow on me. But what did you think?
He's definitely the one sort of poking this adventure along with a stick. He's like poking it with a stick just to see what happens, I think. But he was definitely a little, I don't want to say annoying to me, but I felt he was, you know, a little flippant towards the crew at times, which works because he's, you know, used to just being on his own and not having a family, and he doesn't want to get close to these people. So I thought it worked for the character, but I'm definitely looking forward to see what happens when he becomes much more a part of the team and a part of the family that they're building here for the show. No real strong feelings one way or another about him. Mm-hmm. I thought he worked for the story. But I'm looking forward to seeing where he's going to go from here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's the one character set up right from the get-go with the most potential. Like, he has a lot to offer. Simply because of the fact that he's got these force abilities that they're clearly going to unpack.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Speaking of the force, the other force-sensitive character, Kanan Jarrus. What do you think of him?
He's definitely my favorite character. And not just because he's voiced by Freddie Prinze Jr., who's been forgotten since like the late 90s, early 2000s. But no, he's to me, he's your typical heroic character. You know, he's the guy who, you know, he's good with a blaster and he's got a lightsaber. He's my Kyle Katarn. You know, and
he looks like him. He's got a similar costume to
him. He does. Kyle Katarn doesn't exist anymore. So, he's just
Kyle Katarn beard, that's for sure.
That's true. But I thought he was, you know, he was a very, again, a little bit of, to me, and just in general, all the characters at this point are a little one-dimensional. But again, it's a first episode. They're not fleshed out in 40 minutes. But Kanan is definitely my favorite just because he's the Jedi with a blaster. I mean, I love it. And I love that he's clearly, you know, I mean, he's following Obi-Wan's directive. He's staying hidden, but he's staying loyal to the Force. I mean, it's very clear, as we see, especially towards the end of the episode, he still considers himself a Jedi. He still considers himself somebody who communes with the Force, but clearly there's something that's happened in which he's much more secretive about it, right? Mm-hmm. And this is really why I want to read A New Dawn, and I know you're going to talk a little bit about it at the end of the episode, but I'm hoping that's something that might get explored in the novel a bit, is you know, how does he cope with being a Jedi in light of the Jedi Purge. Actually, just because I still don't have access to A New Dawn, I started rereading Dark Lord, The Rise of Darth Vader by James Luceno last night, because you have that character, Rowan Trine, whatever his name is, who to me is, again, it's something similar. It's similar to the Kanan situation. It's somebody after the Clone Wars who has to kind of reevaluate what it means to be a Jedi now that you can't publicly be a Jedi.
Right.
So it's cool to see Kanan he's still, in a sense, he's still being a Jedi in the sense that he's still caring for others. He's taking on jobs that clearly are for the benefit of the impoverished and the outcasts. So mm-hmm. he's still being true to his Jedi roots. He's just not publicly running around dressed as a Jedi waving his lightsaber yet.
Right. Yeah. Although he does pull it out at this point.
He does. In this episode.
So, which of course we saw in all the previews.
Right.
But I really like him too. He's, you know, obviously a little bit reserved and a little hesitant to, you know, add new people into his circle of confidence because he's a Jedi on the run. But I think he's also got a lot of room for backstory development because we don't know a whole lot about him at this point. And especially as, you know, a young man who was a Jedi during Order 66, I think there's a lot of ground that could be covered there with him. So I'm really looking forward to see how they flesh him out because, you know, like you said, everybody, this is basically the establishing episode for everybody. This is the baseline of who these characters are, just the basics. And we'll get characters fleshed out further on in the season. But I'm really looking forward to see how Kanan is fleshed out and how his relationship with Ezra really gets going. Because Kanan's a bit hesitant to welcome Ezra to the group, unlike Hera, who's his girlfriend.
Yeah. Is it, though? I guess so, because it's really interesting. One, you know, when she first interacts with him, she calls him Love.
Love.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure if that was just, like, a friendly name, but... Are they indeed boyfriend-girlfriend?
I believe that is the case.
Okay. Is that covered in A New Dawn? Because I know she's on the cover.
Meet in A New Dawn, and he is definitely smitten with her. So
that's how I felt about you at Fan Days, Jason. Well, not quite the same.
Touche. And A New Dawn is about 5 or 6 years, I think, before this episode.
Okay.
And so they've been, maybe it's four years before this episode. I don't remember exactly the time frame. But it's several years before this episode. So they've had time to have that relationship built up. But yes, they are, as far as I'm aware, in a relationship. And Hera is awesome because the Ghost is her ship, and it's a freaking awesome ship.
It is.
And yet she's like the mother of the group.
Yeah.
And still, you know, real, you know, spunky and everything too. You know, she's sort of the leader, even though, you know, Kanan's obviously got more life experience and more, you know, probably leadership experience. Since it's her ship, she sort of runs the show on the Ghost because it's her ship, but she runs a democracy, as we saw with when they take a vote.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really liking Hera, and she's probably my favorite of the two female characters. Mm-hmm. No, not probably. She is definitely my favorite of the two female characters, and is, you know, as the series progresses, probably going to contend for my favorite female character overall in Star Wars.
Wow.
You know, I really like her.
Yeah.
At this point,
I'm definitely really into it too.
Her last name is Syndulla.
Syndulla. Is that supposed to ring a bell for us?
And that is, well, in the Clone Wars, the Freedom Fighter on Ryloth was Sham Syndulla.
Oh, that's right.
And so
could be his daughter.
I'm thinking he's her dad or maybe her uncle.
Ooh, interesting.
You know, only reason I'm saying uncle is because I don't know if the color of a Twi'lek, if you have to have like two blue Twi'leks to make a blue Twi'lek, or if you can have a red and a green Twi'lek and have a blue Twi'lek. I don't know what happens with that. I don't know. But schemes there, how that all works with Twi'leks. But
I'm a little disappointed.
I'm guessing she's related to Shaam Syndulla, which would be a nice little Clone Wars connection.
Well, I'm a little disappointed that you don't have a better understanding of Twi'lek biology, but that's okay.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. You were saying about Hera before I went off on my Syndulla and biology rant.
I definitely like her too, and I like her even more now knowing that she's Kanan's girlfriend. Because again, like when she says to him, love, and I'm like, okay, are they together? But then I immediately put it out of my mind because I didn't see anything else to give me evidence that they are. I just figured they were close, and that's just like her sweet name for him or something. But making to know that she's actually probably his girlfriend makes me really happy. more so for what it says about Kanan than necessarily her. But I did really enjoy her. I enjoyed her spunk. I liked her outfit a lot too, like the coveralls she wears. She's a very assertive character, but with a lot of spunk. You know, like they're flying away and he's like, aren't you a little busy right now? Spill.
she's clearly all the details.
Yeah, she's clearly a very good pilot. Which is really cool. And like you said, like the ship, the Shadow. I mean, again, this is probably gonna become the Ghost. Wow, good job, Carl. But the Ghost is a really cool ship, and I think that it's in and of itself is gonna become a character in the way that like the Millennium Falcon was. And I really like the cockpit. It does have a little bit of a Millennium Falcon look to it. So I was definitely
I like the fact that none of the seat covers match.
I did too, yeah. They're really retro looking too. Again, it's like very used, it's very lived in. So it's pretty clear that the Ghost is very much their home.
Yes.
Which I really enjoyed that.
And the resident droid on the Ghost is Chopper.
Chopper.
Probably my favorite character in Rebels at this point. Of course, he was my favorite character before I saw the episode. So I'm not sure how much of that is bias. Actually, I'm sure a lot of it is bias. But yes, basically our droid companion for the series, he's a grumpy little astromech droid. Doesn't get a whole lot of play in the first two episodes here, but has some fun stuff in the next episode, which I have seen, Carl has not, which is why we're not talking about it.
Right.
but, you know, there's not a lot to say about Chopper other than the fact that I think he's hysterical, and I'm really excited about him, and I'm gonna have to buy his action figure as soon as I find one.
Yeah, I mean, like I said at the start of the episode, I definitely really like Chopper already as well, and I've never been a huge fan of any of the particular droids. I don't dislike any of them, but Chopper was just really funny, and I like how little he is of a droid. I mean, like, he looks like a very small astromech droid, I don't know, he's already got a lot of character. He's very funny. To me, he is another R2-D2. He really is just filling that character hole in a sense. You know, I mean, he runs around saving little things on the ship during the adventures. But he's just really funny. And I like the way he beeps and stuff. It's just a very different sound from any of the other droids we've heard. So I really enjoyed that too.
Yeah.
Definitely
a unique character among droids.
Yes.
So.
Yes. So I'm going to segue into our next character, Zeb. What's his last name?
Aurelios.
Zeb Aurelios. I love the scene when he's talking to Chopper and he just goes, quiet.
Because Chopper talks back.
Yes, exactly.
All the time.
Exactly. let's talk about Zeb. I really liked Zeb. And I also obviously love the fact that he is the Ralph McQuarrie Chewbacca design. That's pretty freaking awesome. He is the tough guy. He's the muscle of the group, and he's kind of the gruff guy who clearly has no interest in taking Ezra into the group. And I think it's because, again, he is the muscle, but he's the protector of the group. You know, if Hera is kind of the mother, he's the protector. He wants to make sure their group stays safe.
He's the watchdog.
Exactly. But you clearly see that he has a huge capacity for compassion. In that scene when they're, you know, who wants free grub? He's really excited about giving out food to these starving people who've been kicked off their farms.
Right.
So he clearly has a good heart in him, because they all have good hearts. That's what brought them together. But they all have their own unique personalities of showcasing that. I mean, to Zeb, Ezra initially is nothing but a pain and a nuisance who's just trying to steal from them. And what they're trying to steal is for a good cause. He doesn't trust Ezra, so it makes sense that he's very tough with him. But the scene when Ezra gets captured, mm-hmm. you see he's really torn up.
Because it's his fault.
Exactly. And he's really torn up. But I love when he says, "You did good, kid." You know, he recognizes that Ezra has changed a bit since they first met him. Mm-hmm. And he's so disappointed that he let that happen, that he screwed up.
Right. And so I really liked it when he's admitting that he, you know, sort of let Ezra get captured. And they're like, "What did you do?" And then Hera goes, "Kara Zeb Aurelios," you know, and she uses his full name.
Yep, she's the mother.
We know who's, who's in charge in that relationship.
definitely worth mentioning his little Wookiee growl.
Yes, they try to pass him off as a Wookiee, a rare hairless Wookiee.
Yes.
The stormtroopers just sort of look at each other, and he goes, "Oh, forget it," and just bashes their heads in. It's awesome.
Yeah. What'd you think of him?
Oh, I thought he was great. He's a gruff jokester, and I think there's a lot to him in the fact that, you know, he's really skilled with combat, but, you know, under that gruff exterior, that, like you said, there's a lot of compassion. There's a lot of potential for caring and for opening up to Ezra and to us as the audience, because, you know, Ezra is sort of our link into this group to find out who these people are. And so when Zeb opens up to Ezra, he kind of opens up to us too. So I think there's going to be a lot of stuff that I think he's going to bring to the table, and I'm really looking forward to that. But he's funny.
Yeah.
His interactions with Ezra and Chopper in particular are a lot of fun. And apparently he's going to his clip that they released before the series came out, where he's stealing a TIE fighter, and Kanan's just like talking to him over the comm link, you know, "What did you do?" You know, all that sort of stuff. They have sort of that sort of interaction in the episode where Zeb has locked Ezra in the closet, and then Ezra is going through the vents of the ghost. "Zeb, what did you do? Did you let him get away?" And Zeb's like, "No, he's still in the ship." And then they hear him banging around in the vents, and Sabine's like, "Oh yeah, he's in the ship." So,
yeah.
Speaking of Sabine, she didn't really get a lot of character development in this opening. So I'm interested to see what they do with her down the road. Other than the fact that we know that she's not particularly interested in the fact that Ezra has a crush on her, and that she likes to use explosive paint and blow things up.
Yes.
And how pretty does it look? So.
Yeah. She's, of the characters we've met so far, she's the one I cared the least about. And again, not because I didn't like her. I thought she was a fine character. I love that she's got Mandalorian armor. She's definitely a fun character, and I like it because she's actually part of the reason that Ezra is initially intrigued by the group, because he finds her attractive. Mm-hmm. Ezra's like, "All right, maybe I will stick around," in hopes that maybe he'll get something going with her. So I've got no problem with that, and it's worth mentioning the awesome rebel symbol she uses.
You know,
I mean, it's clearly the that rising phoenix that the Rebel Alliance adopts.
Yeah.
But that particular symbol, like that early version of it, I think looks really cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Funny thing.
Okay.
That symbol looks almost identical to the symbol used around the city of Phoenix public buildings here in Arizona.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if that was something that they developed separate or used as an inspiration, because it's like on all like the downtown street signs, they've got little symbol on the side, and on some of the public transportation and things like that, which I found kind of funny when I went there for Phoenix Comic Con this summer. I was like, Rebels is advertising. No.
No.
But no. No, it's just City of Phoenix. Anywho. But yes, I just thought that was funny.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've always loved the Rebel Alliance symbol, and especially the fact that it's a rising phoenix. It's a symbol of hope. So I think it's really cool that that they're clearly using that already, and it's kind of an earlier sketched version of it, which is really cool. So I'd love to get that on a T-shirt. So
right.
So yeah. Any other characters worth mentioning?
Well, we did have a couple of run-ins with Agent Mutton Chops Callus.
True.
And not a lot to say about him, because he's, you know, just our main Imperial officer. And, you know, his real name isn't Mutton Chops, by the way. He just has some serious mutton chops.
And a helmet that perfectly
are hidden
covers them.
By the helmet.
Yes.
I wish I could go grow facial hair like that.
No, you don't.
But I mean, he definitely came across competent.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, having to rely on stormtroopers is a bit of his downfall.
yeah.
So yeah. I think he's definitely someone that doesn't seem to seems to be a threat, and isn't just, you know, a villain of the week type of situation. But he is the lower level of Imperial
intelligence
that we're going to see in this show, I'm sure.
Right.
Well, but not the lowest, because that's the stormtroopers. There's so many stormtroopers are really dense in this show. It's kind of funny, especially when Ezra tricks them into his cell.
My uncle, the Star Destroyer. yeah, definitely. I liked Agent Callus. Thought he was a good villain, but again, there's not too much to him yet. He's just your typical villain who's trying to catch the good guys. But he's definitely shown to be smart, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously we of course get the brief intro of the Inquisitor.
Yes.
So.
It's the very end. It's the last thing in the episode.
Right.
And basically, if you've seen the big trailer, you've seen the extent of the Inquisitor.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Because he's in it for all of 5 seconds. But
pretty
definitely will be an awesome character once we start getting him involved.
Yes. Are there any particular story points that you want to talk about real quick before we, you know, as we move along in this discussion?
Yes. I just want to talk quick about, like, the Ezra stuff with the Force. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's really cool that he's able to, you know, he obviously has some early Force potential, you know, when the trap is occurring and he says something's coming, and then the Star Destroyer comes out of hyperspace, and, you know, he can see things before they happen. It's a Jedi trait.
Yes.
You know, I thought that was really cool. And I also just, when I started to like Ezra again, as I watched it a few more times, is I kind of got lost in his own amazement and wonder at the things he was uncovering throughout the episode. So when he, like, pulls out the lightsaber and ignites it, I love how it kind of pulls his arms back behind his head. Almost like, I always liked that idea of, like, in a sense, the lightsaber is kind of alive, and it does have a bit of a pull to it, which is why, you know, Jedi are really the only people that use it, because it does take a certain skill. So I thought that was really cool when he lights it up and it kind of pulls his body back a little bit. And
it's like the lightsaber hasn't been used in so long that he turns it on and it's just like leaping out of the hilt because it's so excited to be, you know, out again.
Yeah.
And that sort of just like pulls him back a little bit.
Yeah. But there's, you know, there's, you know, when even just his wonder at being in space, it's clear this kid has grown up on that same planet. He's been there his whole life.
Right.
And, you know, he's like, wow, I'm in space, but I'm going to die.
Right.
But I enjoyed his kind of wonder and awe at these bigger things that he's now encountering, you know, and he uncovers the holocron and is, you know, passes, you know, in a sense he does pass Kanan's little test to see if he can open it. He clearly can. And he's very amazed by it. And, you know, and when Kanan, you know, jumps out and says, kid, I'm about to let everybody in on the secret. And he goes out and ignites his lightsaber. And then it zooms into Ezra and he just goes, wow. You know, it is. It's really cool. He's a kid. And any right. kid is going to be amazed at something like this, especially when Jedi are nothing but legends at this point. You know, I mean, this is about, wasn't this like 10 years after Revenge of the Sith?
14, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I believe it's 14 years after Revenge of the Sith, 5 years before A New Hope. So
okay. Okay, so again, I mean, Jedi are nothing but things of legends.
Basically, his entire life, Jedi have not existed. Basically, right. Ezra's entire life. Exactly. I think he's 15.
Yeah. So, yeah, so Ezra certainly has no experience of Jedi. They are nothing but a legend, just like the EU. see what I did there? But, yes. Yeah, I really liked that point. And then again, at the end of the episode, when Kanan shows up and Ezra inquires about the Force, and Kanan gives him that Obi-Wan Kenobi description, and he invites Ezra. He, you know, I love that. He says, you can keep the lightsaber you stole and let it become another dusty part of your collection, or you can give it back to me and come with me and learn the ways of the Force. Again, I love it. This is the hero's journey invitation. Kanan set up a couple little tests for Ezra, because it's pretty clear that Ezra or Kanan is able to pick up on Ezra's Force, you know, abilities.
Right.
And I love that he kind of sets up these little tests and then invites him into this bigger world. So I loved the way that episode ended with Kanan just showing up at Ezra's place and
Ezra's tower.
and inviting him to something bigger than himself. Because it's clear that Ezra, he's kind of a selfish kid. Because off, he's a kid, but he's also all alone. He's got to look out for himself. But here, Kanan isn't just inviting him to learn the ways of the Force, but he's also inviting him into a family.
Right.
And I really like that story point. I love that Ezra, in a sense, is the kind of the main character, I think, in the sense of we're going to be drawn in with him. He's being invited into something bigger than himself. And that's the exact offer Kanan is giving him. And earlier when, you know, Hera, right?
Yes.
Yes. Which is the evil Greek god. Different spelling, I think, but.
No, it's the same spelling. Okay. That's the weird thing. I'm in classics. I know my Greek gods, and Hera is an angry Greek goddess.
Yes.
And yet in Star Wars Rebels, she's the nicest person that we meet. The nicest Twi'lek in existence, I think. Yes. So
I like when Hera says to him, she says, you know, if you only fight for your own life, your life means nothing. You know, she's trying to call a deeper goodness out of him. And then Kanan blatantly gives him an in-your-face invitation. Hey, if you want to make something more out of your life, come with us. You know, there's no judgment in the question. He says, you can stay here, keep the stolen thing, and just keep doing your own thing in this dusty old place. Or you can come on this adventure, this life-giving adventure with us. So it's kind of that classic invitation. So, you know, I really enjoyed that aspect of the episode. And then when he turns around and Kanan's gone, and all I want to do is splice in from The Dark Knight Rises where Batman goes, so that's how that feels.
I was watching I was watching with Kyle Baca, and he goes, and Kanan just pulled a Batman.
Yep. So I definitely enjoyed that.
How much you want to bet he just like jumped over the railing?
Oh yeah, definitely. But I thought that was a really great way to start this off. Give it that old feel of come with us on an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think? Any big story points you enjoyed?
Well, yeah, no, the exploration of the Force idea was really cool. I was kind of hoping that it would get a little bit more spread out, but I suppose that's the big selling point for Ezra to join the team, so I understand it. The rescue of the Wookiees was kind of cool, except the animation of the adult Wookiees, the character models, were a little odd. Kind of lumpy and almost pudding-like rather than furry. I don't know. The Wookiee character models were a little weird to me. But
yeah, they were. The Wookiee models were really weird looking.
Other than that, and of course the fact that it was really like fast-paced and not a lot of like time spent with the characters for obvious reasons, because we're introducing like six characters plus a villain plus getting a little mission in 40 minutes, you know, 40, 45 minutes, you know, you don't have a lot of time to do much with everybody, you know, other than the Wookiees and the fact that it felt a little bit rushed. I love the whole thing. The music was great. You know, there's a little bit of original stuff. There's a lot of OT stuff, and there's a little bit of PT stuff, all mixed together. So, I really like the music, and the music, definitely gives it a very Star Wars-y feel.
So. Yeah. I want to just real quick jump in, because I forgot to mention that earlier too. Is it Chris Kiner again?
Kevin Kiner.
Kevin Kiner, right. I was never crazy about the music in the Clone Wars. I mean, I love the Clone Wars, but the music never felt like Star Wars to me at all. Here and there, like whenever they have hints of, you know, Star, like, you know, film music, sure it did. Mm-hmm. And I get that they were trying to develop a different feel, and I'm fine with that, but the music of Star Wars is such a central part of Star Wars that I was kind of disappointed in the Clone Wars, because I just never felt like I was listening to Star Wars music. I felt like I was just listening to, like, it was all good music. Don't get me wrong. The music was well done, but I just felt like I was watching like a high intensity computer game. It reminded me of something that would be in like an action video game. So like getting so much of the OT music interspersed here really added to the Star Wars feel. And they even changed some of it up. There's a part where, you know, after they've rescued the Wookiees and they bring the young Wookiee back to his father or mother, whoever the heck it is, there is a hint of Leia's theme, but they change it a little bit. I mean, you can tell that it's a Leia's theme, but then they change it a little bit. They do the same thing when they're being chased by the TIE fighters. There's a hint of the asteroid field chase in there. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and during the speeder bike chase, when they're still in the city going through the alleys, there's a little bit of some of the Geonosis Arena battle music playing, some of the really fast paced stuff. Mm-hmm. The use of some of the old themes tweaked, because I don't think any of them were used explicitly except for maybe some of the Force music. All the other themes were, you know, they'd start out about the same and then they'd veer off, or they'd, you know, skip a couple of notes or something. You know, they were all tweaked. They weren't exact, but there was enough of them to know what it's referencing.
Exactly. So.
One other thing I wanted to bring up is twice in this they reference Grand Moff Tarkin.
Mm-hmm.
With Tarkin Town, where they take the supplies to give to the, you know, the disenfranchised citizens of Lothal.
It's a little happy town. Welcome to Tarkin Town.
Very happy.
If you've had your land stolen and your food stolen, come live in Tarkin Town. This message brought to you by Akbar's Hats. Overnight Carbonite. Up next.
And then when they're going to board the Imperial transport to rescue the Wookiees before they figure out it's a trap, Hera name drops Tarkin, you know, that they've been ordered to deliver this Wookiee to the transport by Governor Tarkin, you know. So with those name drops of our favorite Grand Moff, I think it's only a matter of time before we see him in this series. So
I wonder if he'll be voiced by Stephen Stanton.
Probably. I would think so, especially since they brought James Arnold Taylor back for the voice of Obi-Wan.
Yeah, it was kind of a rhetorical question. Yeah. But yes. Good point. Yeah. And that, how cool was that, though, the holocron with Obi-Wan?
Oh, it was cool.
Yeah.
I'm still hoping that they're going to be able to access more of the holocron, and he's going to be able to teach them some stuff, you know, as far as, like, recorded stuff. But if it's just, like, that message, I'll be a little disappointed because I wanted a little more of Obi-Wan.
I'm fine with having a little bit more Obi-Wan, but I wouldn't want it via holocron. I don't think he would take the time to sit and record little teachings when they're on the run.
Unless he recorded it before Order 66.
True, that's fine. But see, I would love, in some small way, at some point, for them to bump into him on Tatooine. And maybe him to get kind of upset with Kanan for now having been publicly showing, you know, his mm-hmm. Jedi abilities. Yeah. I think that might be cool.
I think that's a little more likely, though, because, you know, while their base of operations is Lothal, as we saw, they do leave the planet, you know, so we will see if they make it to Tatooine. Before we wrap this up, I do want to bring up A New Dawn, which I have read. It is a very good book.
Yes.
John Jackson Miller. It is a prequel, as most of you probably already know, to Rebels. And it is how Kanan and Hera meet. They are the only two characters from the TV show that show up in the novel. We learn a couple of things about Kanan. One, that Kanan is not his real name. Most of you have probably been figured that out because it's not like a huge spoiler. It's told in like the first two pages of the book. By the way, the way it's set up, it's short chapters. John Jackson Miller has, you know, short, concise, fast-moving chapters that make it a very easy read, and a very quick read and a very fun read. So I applaud him for that. But it's the setup for the book is Kanan is basically in hiding, getting by without purpose, trying to figure out what he's supposed to be doing other than laying low. If he's supposed to do anything other than laying low. And Hera has come to this planet that he's on looking to see if there are people that might be worth keeping an eye on for future rebellion against the Empire. And there's a lot of stuff that goes down, and I don't want to give anything away in case you haven't read the book, because you really should pick it up. It's very good.
Can I ask one spoiler-light question?
Sure.
Did you have to think about it?
Sure. No, I didn't. Sure.
Does Kanan use his lightsaber at least once in the novel?
I don't believe he uses his lightsaber, but he does use the Force.
Okay. Not as exciting, but okay.
And that is how Hera figures out who he is.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
But yes, because she's not impressed with him for most of the book. She's like, well, he's got flashes of great, you know, maybe he could do something, but he really has no heart for anything.
Yep.
So I'm just going to have to say goodbye and walk away. So, but of course, like I mentioned before, he's smitten with her. He thinks she's a vision and that voice, you know, he mentions how, you know, the voice is like music to his ears several times in the book. So, but yes, that's a quick spoiler-free review / plug / highly encourage. Go read A New Dawn. But yes, any other final thoughts on Rebels before we start winding things down?
No. I mean, again, I really love this show, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. I think it has a lot of potential already to kind of just, I mean, I loved the Clone Wars, and again, this is not meant to in any way dismiss the Clone Wars. I love them. But just already, I feel like I'm being invited into a new Star Wars adventure. And I think that's indicative of everything we're about to get from Star Wars. Episode 7, we have no idea where it's going to go. Rebels, we have no idea where this is going to go because we don't know these characters. Right? With Clone Wars, and even with the prequel trilogy, there were certain things we knew had to happen and couldn't happen.
Right.
So I think this is really exciting. Everyone is at risk. Anybody could die for all we know. Same with episode 7. And again, I know there are a lot of EU fans still really pissed off with what they did, and I totally hear you. But at the same time, I'm excited to pick up a new EU novel and have no idea where it's going to go. So, you know, I think this is just a very exciting time for Star Wars fandom. So,
I agree. I agree. I think my favorite part is the adventure and humor side of Rebels. I'm definitely glad that they're adding more humor because there's a lot of, you know, quips and, you know, funny asides that they do and say, and some the comedic timing was a lot of the silent things, especially between the stormtroopers, really funny. Quick thing, when they're starting the speeder bike chase at the beginning, and, you know, Ezra takes off, and Zeb and Kanan are backing their speeder bikes up, and they run over the stormtrooper. That was funny to me. You know, they just run over the stormtrooper, take off, and he's, like, slowly trying to get back up in the background as the Imperial officer yells into his comlink about those, you know, criminals or whatever. So, but there's a lot of real funny, you know, silent comedy moments that they've animated into the show, and they've got that timing down really well. So, and it's not like overly slapsticky, which is nice, but it's the right balance of comedy and adventure, I think. So,
yeah, totally hear you. So, before we go, we have a quick email you're going to read for us, and then we're going to follow that email up with a Larian inquiry from the same person.
Yes. We got an email a couple days ago from a guy who would prefer to go by Dewey the Mailman. He titled this email 100th Anniversary Late Comment. And so I thought it was really neat to get that, so I wanted to read it here on the show. And then he also sent in a Larian inquiry that Carl will read shortly. But he says, "Hey, Jason and Carl, my name is Dewey the Mailman, and I recently started listening to you guys because I kept hearing Steve Clausen go on about you two, and I do listen to Quiz, which is Carl and Steve's other show, which needs to get another episode out."
Tell Steve.
Now I had to write you and let you know that yesterday as I was walking my route, I had to stop and email Steve about all the negativity on podcasts concerning Star Wars and comics in general. Now, in Star Wars Report, they were doing the Dragon Con coverage panel, and all the panel people had the same theme about what they don't want in Rebels and Episode 7 and how they hate Jar Jar Binks. There was some positive, but it boiled down to what they didn't like in the prequels. And I told Steve how his show is the only one online that is not negative about everything. And I was wrong. There are two. Your show is the same as Steve's because you two love the stuff and you don't go on rants about what George Lucas did wrong in the prequels, even though he created that universe. So thanks for the great show that is fun and positive. Sincerely, Dewey the Mailman. P.S. Late vote on who would win between Jason and Carl. I take Jason because all he would need to do is hold up a mirror and Carl would stop to flex in it and admire himself while Jason would then lop off his head for the win.
Ouch. That's just mean and accurate. whatever. But thanks. Now it's a tie because I won by a vote. So anyway, Dewey, thank you for the email. We appreciate it. And I think we definitely do a good job of always keeping it positive while at the same time offering critiques when critiques are due. Mm-hmm. Our critiques are not meant to be like,
I
hate this, it's so stupid. It's just like, I wish they hadn't done this and I wish they had done that. I think there's nothing wrong with saying that. But I think we have a a fun way about going about all this stuff. So,
right.
But Dewey also had a Larian inquiry for us, and we're just going to follow that up since he kind of gave us a nice little package to end the show with. So Dewey asks, do you think Luke would still forgive his father if he had seen the hologram video of his father killing younglings? And would Leia forgive him, especially after he had her homeworld blown up and also had her tortured? So, good questions, Dewey. Do you want me to take it, Jason, or do you want to go first?
I'll let you go first this time.
Oh, yay. The first response, do I think Luke would still forgive his father? I do, because I think Luke is well aware of all the evil his father has committed. I mean, even when Luke first meets him, he sees him as somebody who cuts down his mentor and his friend. And, you know, he viciously tortures Han to try to draw him out. And, you know, Vader, there's a huge reputation around him that he is a cold-blooded killer. So I don't think Luke seeing that old video would change his perception of his father's capacity still for good. He's well aware of how evil Darth Vader is, yet he's also equally aware of the goodness inside of him that is redeemable. So yeah, I think seeing that video wouldn't change anything. I think Luke would definitely still forgive his father because he sees the capacity for goodness still within him that kind of, you know, overrides all of those evil deeds. Sure, yeah, I'm sure Luke doesn't agree with any of them, but I don't think he would see that and be like, oh, wait, nope, never mind, I can't forgive him. I think he forgives him because of, again, just seeing that deep-seated goodness that was still in him that Padme recognized and that Luke then recognizes. But
right.
What do you say?
I'm going to agree with you on that. I think Luke, at the point that Luke decides to forgive Vader, Anakin, he's pretty well decided that he's going to do that no matter what. Whether or not Luke knows or could have known about the slaughter of the Jedi younglings, I don't think matters, because I'm sure Vader has done equally heinous and horrendous things since then. You know, wiping out entire planets, for instance, with the Death Star, and I'm sure just completely, you know, razing cities to the ground before. I'm sure that's happened. I don't think Vader has done anything, you know, in recent memory that isn't as bad. I mean, I'm sure he's done stuff that is as bad as you know, killing younglings, and I'm sure Luke is aware of it, keenly aware because of his position in the Rebel Alliance. So by the time Luke decides to forgive, it is simply because he has decided to forgive no matter what, out of love. So I think Luke's mind and heart are already made up and will not or could not have been deterred in that regard. So
yeah. And then his follow-up question, you know, is would Leia forgive him, especially after he had blown up Alderaan and tortured her? And again, I feel like this was something that was touched on briefly in the novel A Truce at Bakura, which is one of the first novels that came out in the early 90s. It takes place shortly after the events of Return of the Jedi. Again, that's nothing but a legend now, but, you know, I think Leia could have grown to forgive him, but I don't think she would have was going to do it anytime in the near vicinity of Return of the Jedi events because of those two horrible atrocities he committed. You know, it's funny, you know, in that scene in Return of the Jedi when Luke is like, you know, the Force is strong in my family, I have it, my sister has it, and she picks up on the fact that she's his sister, but he's also revealed that Darth Vader's his father. But Luke never quite calls him our father to her, because I think he knows she's not ready to accept that truth. She's just taken in the truth that Luke is her brother, she made out with her brother. So you know that's no goodness. but you know she's swallowing a lot right now, and I don't think she's even close to the point of being able to forgive Vader. But I'd like to think that yes, eventually she could. You know, through Luke's own sense of compassion that he teaches then to her of why it's okay to forgive him. But I think it would take her a long time. But that's, I don't know, that's what I think. What about you?
Again, I'm going to have to agree with you there. This situation is touched on in a little more detail with the novel Tatooine Ghost, the EU novel Tatooine Ghost, and which is a novel met with mixed reviews, to say the least. People tend to either like it or hate it. But in it, Leia is finally able to forgive Vader. And I don't remember how long after Return of the Jedi it's supposed to be set. But I think it follows a logical path that Leia would have followed. I think by the end of Return of the Jedi, she's probably trying to work her way to being able to forgive Vader because Luke did. I think she's spurred on to working towards forgiveness by Luke, and she's doing her best. I think it would take her some more time because, yes, he did destroy her planet. I don't think the torture would have bothered her as much because she's quite capable of standing up for herself, but just the mass slaughter of millions or billions of innocents on the scale of Alderaan, I think that would have been much more difficult for her to forgive. She probably would have forgiven the idea of her father rather quickly, but that action, I think, would have taken time for her to forgive Vader or Anakin for. So I think it would have been a process for her. Maybe not quite as drawn out as the expanded universe had it originally, but I don't think the torture would have been something that she would have had to really struggle to forgive with. I think it would have been the destruction of Alderaan.
Yeah. So. The complete destruction of every person she ever loved.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but that's a great question. Thanks so much for that one. But before we go, Jason, we do have a new poll.
We do.
Would you mind sharing that with us?
Sure. Our new poll, and this is following off of the previous poll that we did, what is your favorite scene from Attack of the Clones? Obviously, we did Phantom Menace last time. This time is Attack of the Clones, and we will get that out to you on our social media shortly after this episode goes live. And we want you to weigh in on the poll, like you always do. And thanks, everybody, for all of the responses you got on our matchup today. It was a lot, to say the least. Mm-hmm. 30, including you and me, votes total, all of them for Darth Vader. Keep up that level of interaction with us, folks. And where can they do that, Carl?
On Facebook, facebook.com/WampasLairPodcast. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampasLair. You can always email us at WampasLairPodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent.
And, of course, you can find us and all the other great Star Wars podcasts of the 2nd Airborne Division over on StarWarsReport.com. And for those of you who obviously are just as in love with Rebels as we are, be sure to check out the Rebels Roundtable at StarWarsReport.com and definitely give a listen to the Rebels podcast with our good buddies Michael Cohen and Matt Kranke.
They're recording tonight too.
Oh, so. Good. I bet you we get
ourselves. This is the Monday after the premiere, folks. So.
Yes, indeed. So, thank you all.
Indeed. All right. I think that about wraps up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. It was episode number 103. Who is that kid? For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.
What you're talking about? I'm a member of the Imperial Senate on a diplomatic mission to Alderaan.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away!
Oh, Dingle Fritz.
Oh, Dingle Fritz. Fritz and Dingles. Oh, my gosh. I don't know what's going on. And why are you so politically correct? Incorrect, I should say. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Dingle Fritz.
Dingle Fritz. Where are you? What are you doing?
Oh, my.
We'll be right back.